All right, guys, this is Clint Locklear with Justin. We're up at the NTA, and I think we're going to find this interview pretty interesting because I know I'm dealing with a different person. He's meeting me at the motel, asking me if he wanted coffee. He said, no, don't drink coffee. So I assumed he drank Mountain Dew because there's only like two people in the world, and they either drink one or the other. And he just drinks water and Gatorade. So this will explain a lot of what he's doing, I think, later on. But before we get into that, I need to thank our sponsors. They help pay for the show. We have F&T Fur Harvesters, everything you need for hunting, trapping with hounds, and predator calling. We have Funky Trap Tags and Supplies, full line of trapping supplies out of Iowa. Just look them up online. They'll get you taken care of. We have Oki Cable and Trap. Have you seen Jeb here? I haven't seen Jeb.
I haven't seen him. I don't know if he's here or not.
Okay. And Jeb, Oki Cable and Trap from Oklahoma, always has stuff, buys fur, sells meat, really good guy. And then Dunlap Lures, which is Jeff Dunlap, and she traps now. So you can go out and be rest assured that you're getting good quality stuff. So go and introduce yourself so for people don't know who you are. Well, let me say how why I wanted to do this.
All right.
The trapping industry has got the biggest ego people I've ever been around in my life. I've been in the military. I've been in sports. Everybody has got an ego.
Yep.
And then Alan said, do you know Justin? And I'm like, he kind of described you, and I think I've met him before.
Yep.
Because I meet a lot of people.
Oh, absolutely.
And he said, look at this Facebook post where you wrote that, where you said you were so humbled to do that.
No, absolutely.
And I was just going to read that on another podcast and just going, what an opposite of most people. Because when I met you the other day, I'm like, okay, before we start this, you're going to say you're the effing man. And you're like, I don't think I can do
that.
Far from. But I was just joking around with you. That's really cool that you catch what you catch and you're actually that humble about it. And it's not like you're just trying to beat your chest about it. So that's what really got my attention. You know, because there's lots of guys in Iowa that catch 1,000 coon.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's literally guys that, run circles around me. I mean, you know, I went out a couple years ago and went after 1,000 coon and succeeded. But there's guys that actually just here yesterday, I was talking to a gentleman that when they want to dabble into raccoons, as he said, they'll catch 12 to 1,500. When they want to, they're going to hit 2,500 to 3,000. I mean, just... And then they'll switch gears and go after 300 mink or 200 coyotes or things of that nature. And it is extremely impressive to me. I think I'm just the first person to ever try filming going after 1,000 of them.
But right.
It's just, you know, I'm far, far from what I would call a professional at it. Just I go out there, I love doing it, and push as hard as I can every day.
Well, when I came out here and I was trapping on Red's line, he went to Maine to be with somebody else.
I seen that in your movie.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I remember I came across a guy, and you might even know who I'm talking about, and he puts like tombstones up in the creeks. Mm-hmm. He literally takes like flat rip rock and flips it up close to the shore. So you go under a bridge and it looks like a graveyard under there. He smears bait, puts a trap. Besides the manual labor of flipping these big rocks up for a backing, I guess, it's a very simplified way of trapping. Well, I got on where he was at, and it was like every bridge, we're just right on top. So I go to the outside of him. I go back. He's got four more tombstones on the outside of me.
Yep.
And I'm just talking with Red, and Red goes, I know you're a competitive person. You don't want to get into this game with him.
Oh, yeah.
So if you're... Just take what you can take and leave him alone. And I got to ask him. That's when I found out there were guys that were catching 2,500 coon.
No, oh, absolutely.
Because I didn't know people ever caught 2,500 coon.
Yep, absolutely. You know, speaking of that competition that you had, in my opinion, everyone's always worried, oh, there's competition under this bridge. Because here in Iowa, you can trap the road ditches under the bridges. You've got basically 33 feet from the center of the road each way. Most of the time is public. That competition, everyone's scared of. I truly believe it makes you a better trapper.
Absolutely.
Going, seeing other people's sets, trying to not necessarily hide yours from them, but learn how to be more discreet out of sight. You know, and also seeing how they're doing things. You know, we can all learn from everybody, no matter who you are. And just, I had competition when I first started the road line, and just, we competed so much. We literally, when we're pre-staking, which you can do 2 weeks here in Iowa, you can get out 2 weeks ahead of time. We would, actually 2 years ago, we were leapfrogging each other on the road. He'd be at one spot, I'd drive past him 50 yards, set in a spot. And we're in such a rush to beat each other there that we didn't take the time to make actual good sets. And both of us came back later and set where the other one was and made better quality sets that outperformed what the other person did. So, you know, it's all about, you know, just taking your time, making good quality sets like that. But yeah, competition. I mean, I've learned so much from him, and I think he's learned from me, and just it really makes you better. It hones your skills as a trapper, in my opinion, anyway.
Well, another thing that blew me away out here was the quality of coon trappers. Like, all over the country, people catch coon.
Oh yeah.
When I was rolling up behind several guys, and I wish I knew who they were now, because they would know who I was, and they were like, "What are you doing out here? You know, you shouldn't be out here doing this." And they were being nice, but it was kind of like, you know, we don't need guys out here that are as good as you. And I'm like looking, I can see in the back of the truck, I'm like, as good as me, I've got 39 coon, you got 130 coon. Yeah. I mean, if anybody here is intimidated, it shouldn't be you, you know.
Absolutely.
But their rigs, I mean, I saw rigs that were custom made just for coon trapping.
Yep.
That had so much thought in there that I was, because I've just never took coon trapping that serious at home.
Yep, absolutely.
That you would custom make rigs to just go trapping for 2 weeks.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've seen guys, they actually have boxes that slide out 5 feet with wood on rollers. I mean, I've got a little box divider in the back of mine, a three-way divider, where, you know, all my dry, fluffy 220 coon sit. I got a spot where all my wet and muddy, you know, if I am in the water at all, everything there needs washed as soon as I get home. And then there's my other DPs that might have a little bit of blood on them, need washed out or something. And, you know, it's good to keep all that fur separate. And organization's the key when you're running bigger lines. And it doesn't always work that way, but at least you try.
It starts off that way.
Yeah, it normally makes about noon on day one, and then it kind of goes to hell. But
but you're really excited about how organized you are till then.
Oh, yeah, that first 2 months leading to it, I'm like, this is going to be so smooth. Everything's going to go clean. And then it's just like a bomb went off in the truck. And
so introduce yourself, where you're from, before.
Yeah, my name's Justin Deaver, from Central Iowa. You know, first generation trapper. I really had nobody taught me how to trap. Actually, in the American Trapper magazine, I had an article in there. I described that, you know, my dad was huge into bird hunting, and we guided bird hunters all across the state. One of the people we're guiding for, they hired like 16, 18 year old kids to carry birds for him and stuff. And one morning this kid pulled up with three raccoons in the back of his truck, because he'd ran a small line before he got there. And I'd never seen a raccoon up close. I was like 12, 13 years old. Mm-hmm. It just blew my mind. You know, I just sat there and just kept petting this coon. Like, I was just, blew me away seeing that. And that summer, all I could think about, you know, I want to learn how to trap. I want to learn how to trap. So not having any idea, that's kind of right at when the internet was starting to come out. You could get on there a little bit, but I had no idea what I was doing. Took 3 1.5s from the hardware store in town. Walked like a mile and a half back to set them undyed on top of dirt, made this nice fancy wood covey. Took me like a week to catch a possum. I was on cloud 9. Like, that was the coolest thing ever. My dad got so mad when I took a tree stand step and turned it into his power pole at his house to hang it from so I could skin it. And oh man, but it blew up from there every year. Just finally caught a coon the next year, and then I got some private ground to trap and caught 9. I remember catching 9 coon one day, and I was like, this is awesome. This is what I want to do. And it just, every year since then, I've expanded and gotten bigger and learned more. You know, that's why I come to these conventions. A lot of people here really kind of got me to my level. You know, getting around, sitting around Friday nights, talking to what I would call, you know, those people that catch the 3,000 coon. Just sitting around picking their brains, you know, just, it's all fun, you know, everyone's having a few beers, drinking, having a good time, and all of a sudden those people start talking, you can hear a pin drop, because everybody wants to learn. And that's what I've done here, and that's the most amazing thing. You get a bunch of trappers around, good people just want to learn from them.
It's a shame the conventions. Like, how old are you?
33.
25 years ago, the conventions were so radically different than they are now. I mean, they were rougher. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it was kid friendly, but it was rougher.
Yep.
Of course, the world was rougher, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Back then. But back then, I don't think anybody from age 70 to 7 went to bed before 4 o'clock. Ever. I mean, there may be a few fights, and there may be people get drunk and throwing traps up and catching their hands and trying to sling it. All that was very common. But everybody stayed up till 3, 4 in the morning. And no matter how tired you were, you had to force yourself to go to bed.
Yep.
And I wish it was kind of like that now, but it's, if you try to do that now, you'd just be out there looking around by yourself.
You know? Yeah, for sure.
So you're a single guy. You're wealthy, so you don't have a job.
I've gotten a wife.
Everything's paid for, so you just get to go out and be like a playboy's life to go catch these thousand carp.
Boy, I would say that would be nice, but my wife would probably be upset about that. So
yeah, don't say that.
That couldn't be the farthest from the truth. The whole reason I even started filming this is when I caught 1,082 2 years ago, I had comments like that, you know, wow, it must be nice to be single, or, you know, I wish I didn't have a job. And honestly, it just straight pissed me off. I was frustrated with it, you know, because I have a young family. My daughter's 4. My boy just he's getting ready to turn 15. You know, been married 6 years now, have a full-time job that I'm getting 50 hours a week at regularly. And you know, I'll take a couple of weeks off for sure at the start of trapping season. But, you know, I'm my family and my job's always been priority. And I'm trying to show people that you can still go out there if you have the drive in you. Everyone thinks, you know, you have to not have a job or be a professional to do it. I'm farthest thing from a professional, but if you push yourself hard enough, you know, you got to have the populations, obviously. You got to have the setup to handle that kind of a catch. But most importantly is that drive. You got to push yourself, you know. It's early season, before season starts, I'm getting vitamin C, multivitamins, you know, getting beefed up on them because it's tough and it's going to wear you down. But, yeah, it's pretty frustrating when I had all those people telling me, you know, the only way you can do it is if you're single, don't have a job. And
well, the sad thing is those people, all they see the world as it must be nice for everybody else.
Exactly.
And they never get shit done.
Exactly.
Because you can do, I mean, I've said it many times, what you do with a full-time job is actually harder than what I do because this is my job.
Yeah.
Because it's 8 to 8 or 8 to 12, you know, in the evening, or it could be 8 to 4 in the afternoon. I don't have to try to flip all that out. Now, I was not the best husband for 20 years because I was never there.
Yeah.
But as far as the time of the day, and I just didn't have to worry with that. Because I've been more impressed with guys that have full-time jobs.
Yeah.
That go really crank stuff out, because that's radically different of what we do.
Oh, absolutely. You know, most of those guys are, you know, they have that time commitment where they have to clock in at 7. You know, I work 7 to 5 every day for 5 days a week. And, you know, it's got me up at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning running traps and then coming home in the evenings. This is one thing I'll stress. I always promise my wife, no matter what, from 5 o'clock when I get home from work till they go to bed, I'm inside with them. Very, very rarely, unless something's drastically going on in the shop, am I out there when they're home. So run before work, spend time with them, and then once they go to bed, boom, out in the garage, trying to get caught up on skin and whatever. And makes for some long nights, but yeah, it's, you know, you gotta, my job pays the bills. I love to trap no matter what, but my job's where my money's gonna come from, and my family's always gonna come first, but I still love to do what I do and push as hard as I can when I can.
Well, when coon prices come back up, which it seems like they are, but the numbers you're catching, that's a pretty big bump on income.
It would. It absolutely. You know, I keep telling my wife that to let her keep me doing this. One day, honey, one day these prices are going to come back.
My advice is, when it does, and you come in with 20 or 25 grand, just one time, just hand her the check and say, do whatever you need to do with it.
Told you.
No, don't say told you. Just say, you go do what you need to do, yep. And that'll drastically change her view.
Yeah. She's a huge support. I mean, you know, my wife, she has a full-time job herself. She's going to school at night for about 4 hours every single night.
So y'all are just lazy people is what you're saying.
basically. No, it, you know, and then on the weekends, you know, like I said, I'm home in the evenings, but Saturday and Sunday, I still got to run them. So she's basically a single mom on the weekends, and she supports me. You know, trapping's not something she's ever really got involved in by any means, but she completely understands why I love it and why I do it. And, you know, she helps me out a lot. You know, if it wasn't for her, this wouldn't be possible, especially with two kids. So having her support really means the world to me. You know, it makes me able to do, actually it gives me more drive, if anything. You know, when I'm struggling some nights, like, man, I'm just so tired. And she'll just come give me a kiss and be like, you've got this. And it's like, you're right, I do. Time to man up, quit being a puss about this, and get back at it. So she's a huge support. I definitely couldn't do it without her.
It's amazing the power that someone you care about has with you when they say something like that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Just completely lift me off the ground. You know, when I'm feeling down or had a couple bad days grinding out coon or something, and she can just, boom, her mood come home, and seeing her, just, I'm ready to go again.
So walk me through what the season is like for you when you probably scout all summer.
Are you been
there long enough to know where majority of your line's going to be? But after the scouting, walk me through what your season's like.
So for me, you know, I do a lot of scouting early. I call it the homework. You know, do your homework ahead of time. You know, trap prep, all your scouting. I map everything on a GPS. I have a little handheld, one of the early models of GPS where you can hit two buttons on the fly and it marks a wave point for you. So I'm marking all these wave points, get everything scouted out. We can pre-stake 2 weeks ahead of time. So as soon as that 8 o'clock in the morning, 2 weeks ahead of time, I'm laying steel. And I'm just gonna go the whole weekend, set as much as I can. The following weekend, set as much as I can. Get 300 to 500 locations already trapped in the ground, ready to go. And then come opening day. 300 to 500 locations. So that's, I don't know, anywhere between 500 and 600 traps. Just depends on what I'm doing. You know, I'm obviously going after coon, but just crop rotation is huge for me here in Iowa. But yeah, opening day, then I'll set probably around 180 to 220 locations, right around 350 traps or so, give or take. And wherever I stop, then the following day, you know, once I'm running, once it starts to die down a little bit, like day two or day three, then I'll set another 10% of that line. Mm-hmm. Just to try to keep my numbers. You've rode line in Iowa. You know that if you don't keep adding on the roads,
you'll die.
Yeah. I figure you're going to catch 60% that day of what you did the previous day. That's kind of a number I go by. So, you know, I think this year is a pretty good example of it. We caught 132 coon opening day. Second day was like 81. And then I was down into, I think it's 58 or 60, something like that. So if you don't, and at that point, you know, I'm adding to my line because I got to keep those numbers up, you know. Because, yeah, then you're just driving around wasting gas once you've taken that cream of the crop, and if you're not adding to your line.
So once you take off 2 weeks to start.
Yep.
Which seems like what everybody I met did up here.
Yep. It's,
well, before, let me back up, because I had this thought when I was out here last time. I would drive by, and the guys that run the kill poles, it seemed like they had thousands, thousands of yep. those things out. Does the state never come through with a bush hog and cut the grass? And I mean, what happens? Are you running the road ditch or just creeks?
Road ditch. I actually almost avoid the water altogether. But yeah, no, I don't use a lot of snares. I'm mostly DPs and 220s. But even some of those guys get the brush hog low enough that it takes out DPs. I've got kind of a shrine at home of what's left of all the tubes of DPs and everything else.
I mean, I just couldn't imagine how heartbreaking. You go get out 900 snares, And then the bush hog comes by and destroys every single kill pole and snare you put
out. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think last year they got me for, I think it's 6 or 8 dog proofs in a row, this whole stretch of road. And it's frustrating, but I mentally process that as kind of like theft, and you just get past it and move on the best you can. So,
do you have theft problems after you pre-stake?
Honestly, no. I think most of my theft comes from people that are up to no good, driving around, drinking beer on the weekends, shining in ditches, you know, poaching, whatever. I don't think they realize that you can pre-stake 2 weeks in advance. So if they're up to no good, it's, hey, Jim, trapping season opened up this weekend. Let's go see what we got. You know, it's not many people, but other than a trapper would know that we can pre-stake. So not too much. Mostly during season, I'll get a few, but not terrible.
So you take your 2 weeks, and I'm assuming you try to get a majority of your 1,000.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'd like to have about 700 to 800 of them in that 2 weeks, if possible.
And then once you go back to work, what's your day like?
Long.
Well, sure it is.
Long.
I bet it is.
You know, I'll switch gears from then. Then most of my line will get pulled, and I'll set. I've got like 3 work lines that I'll set. A lot smaller routes, probably 30 locations is all, but I've got about a 35-40 minute drive to work, so I'll just get up about 2:30 in the morning and just check those all the way to work. You know, just different lines. I mean, some of them kind of belly out, some of them might be 50 miles, some might be 70, but all of them head eventually back towards work. It's kind of hard timing that, knowing what you're going to catch onto what time you pull in. I clock in at 7 in the morning, and I've scrambled to get there at 6:57 before, and I've also pulled in the driveway at 5:30 going, well, shit, now we're going to be taking a nap in the truck and set an alarm on the phone. But, you know, those are some long days, you know, and then coming back home after work, and like I said, always come inside with the family, you know, check, see how school, daycare was. And that is so hard after that, when you've ate dinner, you're sitting on the couch, you've already been up for 16 hours. All right, honey, I'm going to bed. I'm going to the garage. You know, you're winding down, you're settling down, and that's probably the hardest thing I have issues with for the what I'd call the drive and push. Is, you know, it's not just the push to go out in there and catch those animals, but you still have to take care of them and handle them afterwards. And those nights, you know, I'm not catching a lot of coon at those times. You know, 15 is probably a really good morning for me, because I don't have the time to run, you know, catch 100 coon. But yeah, still going out there to skin 15 coon and taking an hour and a half or so out there, it'll wear on you pretty good.
And you use a machine?
Yes, I got a skinning machine. Actually, here at the convention, A&J skinning machines, I got a couple from him. And those things, if you've never used a skinning machine for a raccoon, you're missing out, because that is the only way I'll ever skin a raccoon anymore. I will never do one by... My machine actually broke here about 3 years ago on opening day. I set my dad up. My winch went out on me, so I sent him up to Harbor Freight, and he was gone probably about an hour and a half, and by the time he'd come back, I'd skin 2 coon and had 6 beers, because I was so frustrated. I was like, I give up.
Just because your system was messed up.
Yeah, just because the winch, I mean, you know, those winch pull those carcasses right out, and it's so much easier to sit there and hit a button and just watch it skin itself, pretty much, you know, versus, you know, the old grab it and twist the hide in your hands and yank it down, and it's just so much work. And if you ever had a skinning machine, it's just, man, they're worth their weight in gold.
They are. So you're catching all this, 1,000 coon. Are you selling like every week?
Nope. I put up all my fur. So I'll skin it, you know, obviously that day or the next day if I get a little behind. But everything goes in the freezers. I've got 13 chest freezers and a walk-in freezer now in the shop. So, you know, that's a lot of people sell on the carcass, and that's fine too. But knowing that I'm going to put them up, I have to have this kind of a setup to handle that many. So, and that's a lot of people don't realize too, is if you're going to catch that many, you gotta know what you're doing with them, you know?
Yeah, this the hides of 1,000 coons is a huge volume.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it fills up freezers pretty quick.
The first, I remember, I came across this deal and I bought one of those ice freezers, the double door.
Yep.
You know, not the new glass ones, but the one with the big heavy
doors.
And I'm doing all that beaver and I'm looking at that thing and I'm going, oh, this is going to be sweet. I knew I had to freeze it before I put it in there because it doesn't get cold enough to freeze, but it'll keep it frozen.
Exactly.
And I was like, oh, I'll be able to get like 150 beaver. No, the most I ever got in there was 61.
Yep. Oh, yeah. They fill up a lot quicker than you think. You can look at one of those big, I think they're like 18 cubers, and it's like, oh, I can fit 500 coon in this. No. You might get about 250 if you're lucky. You know, and a lot of those smaller 10 cubers, you know, you're looking at 120, 150 coon. I mean, it's just, you think you can, but that's a good point you said, you know, about them freezing in there. When I, those first few big days, you can't just roll up coon hide, throw it in the freezer, roll another one up, throw it in there. I'll go a layer across every one of my freezers.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you stack that much warm fur together, you're going to have rotten stuff in between because it won't freeze in time.
Well, it's a fur coat.
Exactly. And it just, you know, if you stack, you know, potentially four coon on top of each other, those middle couple, they're not going to be froze for, you know, 3 days possibly. It just depends on your freezer. But so everyone's always like, why don't you just fill one up and go to another one? It's, you know, when you got 100 and some coon laying out, it's put 10 in this one, 10 in this one. And then once you get to the end, those first ones are, I call them jelly. They're starting to really thicken up, that fat's getting hard. And then I can start laying across again. I've learned my lesson with that. I've lost a few furs.
There's a story with that.
Oh, yeah. I've lost a few furs, you know. Just, it's all part of the game. You know, you learn and improve no matter what you're doing.
So with that type volume, Red's system was, he had this little building with like 2x4s running on posts that looked like something you could just like put ponies in with nails. And if they were wet, those went on the back foot to dry.
Yep.
But he didn't use any type of fans or anything. Are you using something more mechanical to get them dry?
No, it's pretty similar to his probably. And I doubt I'd ever come up with something better than what Red could. I mean, he was just he's a raccoon legend in Iowa for sure. But basically I got very similar, just kind of a freestanding, not even just a table. I made legs for it and just got two by four by 16 deals, and I put screws about every inch on it on both sides. So it sits behind my garage, so it's always in the shade. And if I have a wet coon, I take it out there and I hang it once I've got it skinned and just let, you know, Mother Nature, you know, just dry it down, just keep it out of the sun. And, you know, it's November, so generally our highs are, you know, 55 anyway or lower even at the very beginning. So I can leave it out there for 4 or 5 hours, dry it out. And, you know, I want to improve on that too. You know, there's always little things that, okay, I can improve on this process, or how do I?
Well, I've heard of guys, and you probably know this being from here, where they have like 4 or 5 shelves.
Yep.
And they'll have squirrel fans on one end, and they can actually close those in with just a wood door, and it's constantly blowing
just
through.
Just tunneled, yep.
Which led me to think, you use a camper top, I'm sure, of some type in your truck, or is it open?
It's open.
It's a wow.
Yep, I keep mine open.
I've often wondered, when I saw those guys with those big camper tops, they had all that stuff inside, if you were to run, like, honest to goodness, say a 12-inch pipe and bring it off on an angle where you're going in the, driving at 60 miles an hour, you're shoving 60 miles an hour air into that thing.
Oh, yeah.
Bring that tube down to your section where you have the wet coon, so it's constantly getting, because when I used to catch beaver and muskrats, especially the muskrats, they'd be wet.
Oh, yeah.
I would just string them off the side of my trailer, which you could not do today because you would be in, I mean, I'd go down the road with like, you know, 30, 40 muskrats flopping like flags, but when I got home, they were dry.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, that's actually a really good idea. If you could find a way, I've thought about that, a similar thing of, you know, if you could figure out some way, yeah, like you said, to funnel that air down through there. That system I got in back of my truck, it is all lifted up on 2x4s, so at least it can drain down and run out the back, which something I need to work on too, because, you know, I try to be really subtle about when I pull over and check stuff. I don't pull over hard because someone can see it there, but when you sit there for a while, all of a sudden now you got this 2-foot round circle of blood laying there on the road once you take off. And But yeah, it's a good way. You know, you need to get them dry right away if you can.
Now, do you do the cat jumping like Red does?
No.
Have you ever seen what he does?
I don't think so, no.
Dude, you've got to go with Red one day. Just.
Oh, I'd love to.
He'll pull on, especially on the gravel roads. I think y'all call them A or B roads or something up here.
But okay.
He stays in the middle of the road.
Okay. Yeah. No, I know what you're talking about.
And he jumps like a cat. And he'll like find a grass clump and he will like land on there like it's a cat on like a little table. He'll balance and he'll go to the next one and balance. He will not leave a footprint.
No, I know exactly. Yep, I know what you mean now. I don't mess with it too much when it's dry out, but when we get, you know, some rain and those gravel roads get soft, I'll do something pretty similar. I've actually done it. I got a rail on the bottom of my truck. I've walked along that, jumped in my box before, and jumped into the ditch from the other side. Just because, yeah, I mean, you know, you leave those footprints there. Or, you know, I took a couple hours here on Thursday to take one of my buddies out road trapping. He's never done it before, and he wants to learn how to do it. So I was showing him areas, and we had a couple dead end spots, and you can see where he pulled over and looked at this coon trail coming from corn going to timber, like I talk about. And when we turned around on the dead end road, and I said, "Look at that. See your tire tracks? You're going 5 mile an hour," and took a hard left right towards the ditch. Every person up to no good that comes by here is going to go, "What the hell are they doing? What's down there?"
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I won't necessarily park in the middle of the road, but when I pull over, I'm starting 100 yards sooner.
Mm-hmm.
Just to make it look like I'm passing a vehicle is the best way I could describe it. Because, you know, our gravel roads, they're pretty much made for one right. vehicle. So when you're passing someone, you know, you're getting over, you know, you're not going to get over 5 feet before you get to them. You're pulling off to the side as soon as you can. And I think that really helps a lot. But yeah, like you said with Red, the cat hopping, I've never heard it called that.
It reminds me like a cartoon, like ding, ding,
yep.
ding, ding.
Yep.
And he looks around at me, and at the time I was like 330 pounds, and he goes, "You need to jump from grass." Oh, no, 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 it ain't gonna work, man.
Oh, shoot, that's good.
So is your area open? We're in Spencer, Iowa, for anybody who doesn't know. This is way open compared to Red's.
Oh, absolutely.
So yours is this open where you live?
No.
No.
No, no, I'm down. I don't have as good of locations as where Red's at, but I'd be the next step right below them, I'd say. Actually, a bunch of my buddies are from this area. When I came up here, I said, "I don't know how you guys coon trap up here, because I couldn't catch 100 up here probably," because mm-hmm. they don't have the timber that we do down home. You know, there's
you figured out.
Yeah. It'd be a learning curve, mm-hmm. you know, and it's just you learn no matter where you're going. It's all different strategies. Up here, they said they're big like culvert coon. They live in the culverts up here versus the timber. I'd never heard that for a day in my life till I got up here. So always soaking that in and kind of learning from it. But yeah, my area is a lot thicker, more like Red's, you know, where it's everywhere you drive, you got timber here and corn or beans on the other side of the road. And that's pretty much my bread and butter.
So you're using 220s.
Yep.
And are you using, how are you setting those up?
Oh, that's a good question. I actually came up with this idea. I shouldn't say I came up with it, but I don't know if anybody else that's done this yet. So I won't take full credit in case somebody else has already that I don't know about. But
you came up with
it. Yeah, in my eyes, I came up with it. So I take an old muskrat stretcher, and I'll cut the very bottoms off. So it's a big U shape.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sticking that through the inside of the jaws of the 220.
Oh.
And I'll slide that down to about, oh, the top of the rat stretcher is about 3 inches above the 220.
Which will get them to go under, too.
I'll stake that in my trail, and then you can adjust your height how high you want it on that stretcher. Because I try and keep my 220s, you know, that's one of those things. There's so many people say you want it 6 inches off the ground, you want it on the ground. I keep mine 2 or 3 inches, just depends on the angle the trail is at. That's mm-hmm. a huge thing for me. But where that U on the top is with that muskrat stretcher, you can take the grass next to you and fold it through it, and it makes what I would call the sexiest funnel for a coon to go through. I mean, it works really well. Then I'll
you know a guy that makes stretchers that probably could make your stands.
Yeah, yeah, I do.
I mean, that would sell.
Yeah, I really think so. I've I've tried showing people online about it, you know, all my videos, like, hey, you know, nothing wrong with a steakalyzer. If that stuff works for you, awesome. But if you're looking for an alternative way, try this once. So then I use Pogo anchors for everything. And on my 220s, I have about a 6-foot anchor. I'll anchor that way off to the side on the trail. So when that coon hits that, you know, they're going to flop for a couple seconds. They'll pull the whole system out of the ground and swing down below that anchor, mm-hmm. and it keeps that trail moving. Mm-hmm. I learned this a couple years ago. I wish I could figure out who gave me credit or who to give credit to for it. But they said that smell of death, or, you know, all that feces on the trail and just that coon sitting there will deter, not necessarily deter, but catch the senses of coon coming up that trail. In my eyes, you know, that coon's coming up there and he's going somewhere. His senses might not be 100% keen right now, and that's how you hit him. As soon as he catches a smell or a whiff or something's wrong, boom, ears, nose, everything's fully activated now, and that's when he's finding that 220 shape, and that's when you start getting your refusals and your walk around.
I'm definitely way of that.
So
when I was out here, you know, I was reading all this stuff from different people. And after, you know, like on the way home, because it's a long way from here to Tennessee, you think.
Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, and I'd hear people's different theories. And the majority of the theories at the time was catch them all as quick as you can. So you go in and you'll put, you know, five, if you think there's 5 or 6 coon coming down the trail. And these trails, you can tell they're like super, super active. Yep. So I would load up 6, 7, 8 traps on those things, catch 1 or 2 coon, and it would go deader than a freaking hammer. But I had all that time and energy. I wish, because I'm going to ask you this, I wish I'd have went maybe 2 traps per trail, 1 trap per trail, just hit more trails, and I bet it would have been a better catch at the end.
A little more productive for you.
Absolutely. Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, I'll say very rarely am I setting 4. 2 is most common. 3 is pretty rare too, but 2 is about my bread and butter, just because that's, you know, I can carry 2 coon out of a ditch without really fatiguing myself. You know, you start getting 3 to 4 coon carrying out of the ditch, you know, I'm not exactly a small person anymore, and that's quite a bit of weight. You know, we got a pretty good sized coon. You know, it's 30 pounders are few and far between, but, you know, 25 pounds isn't uncommon here by any means. And so you start carrying that many coon, I'd rather come through 3 days, take 2 coon off of here, and be able to set 3 times as many trails, and take 6 here now, and be just so congested in an area. So I'd rather cover a lot of ground with a fair amount of sets in it than hammer one area heavy and jump to the next. You know, and there's other people that, like you said, that's what they want to do, is just hammer it hard for 2 days and leave. And, you know, it just is. That doesn't really work for me, but, you know, if it works for them, absolutely. I mean, it's whatever works for you and you want to do.
I can't get this stretcher thing out of my mind. Have you ever tried that on a 330?
Actually, this year I experimented using a number 4 coon stretcher and using it on a 330.
I've got piles of those things.
That's one of the things I said, too. It's like, you come to these conventions, I saw muskrat stretchers, old ones, for $8 a dozen. You know, you can cut the bottoms off them with bolt cutters, and you've got yourself a nice stabilizer. You know, because I use those stabilizers for a while. They work good, but
they're heavy.
Yeah, they're heavy. And I, you know, they're not cheap either. You know, you're paying, probably $3 a piece for them anymore. Anyone that's been trapping for a while, almost all of them have old rat stretchers laying around somewhere that, you know, so it works really well for me. I really like it.
So how are you keeping the tension on because the gap's going to be bigger than the muskrat stretcher.
The gap's gonna be bigger.
Like when you run your muskrat stretcher up, it's probably what, 1/4 inch metal stretcher. Well, the gap in between, you know, the dog and the jaws is gonna probably be at a minimum, if you bring it all the way tight, it's 1/2 inch.
Yeah, it's got a little bit of give, I'd say, especially it depends on what soil type you're in, but I actually like that. A lot of people, you know, you want that sucker completely solid. In my eyes, that coon all day long is going through all night long is running through that timber, you know, hitting sticks, and stuff's moving for him. You know, certain things are solid, but also he's going through brush piles or whatever, going through grasses and stuff's moving. When he hits that 220 and he feels just that slight push, he thinks, in my eyes, I can push through this. You know, it's going to move for me. And that's just, I like it. You know, other guys, absolutely not. You want that 100% solid. And when I say give, I mean, yeah, it's the top of that might flex, you know, a quarter inch each way. But it's really, really pretty solid.
And you're using your springs to give you your height?
No, actually, just where the bottom of the rat stretcher kind of widens out.
Oh, it sits on that.
Yeah, it'll actually sit on that. So that's, I mean, if you want it a little higher, you know, you got your rat stretcher, typical shape. If you want it to set higher, you just widen out that stretcher before you put it in there. And all of a sudden, you know, it's this wide, so it'll sit higher up on it.
Dude, that is freaking genius.
I'm really proud of the idea. I really am. I tried showing that several times in my videos. As a matter of fact, I'm going to do a video just on setting trails on 220s using it here after convention.
Wow. Because what used to frustrate me with the stakeholders, some didn't fit certain traps.
Yep.
And you would have to use so much. I mean, you were like bending the jaws to be able to get the dog on there.
Yep.
Or it'd be so loose because you didn't want to take it that far that it would just dunk and fall off.
Yeah. Yeah, no, this is stabilized, I mean, through the whole system. You know, it's not just right there on the bottom of the jaws where it's you know, stabilized. This comes all the way up through. So the whole thing will, you know, have a little bit of give. But in my eyes, I like that. And it works pretty well for me. I had really good success with it, especially when I started swinging them off to the side with those pogos and keeping that trail moving. I went from catching one or two coon on a trail to four to six. I mean, just depends, but it keeps that trail moving, flowing. You know, I really like it.
You don't know how sick I'm feeling. When I moved a year and a half ago, I gave away.
Yeah. Well, good news, you can buy a whole bunch of them.
I know, but I gave away 600 or 700 of those.
Yeah.
I use wood now.
Yep.
And I'm like, okay, I've been keep just like staring at these things in the way forever.
Yeah.
Oh my. Okay, so your dog proofs.
Yep.
What's your system on those?
This.
Which ones do you use?
I use Duke.
Duke. Okay.
Just because I like the pull only. A lot of guys like push pull. For my system, how I do it, push pull wouldn't work. It kind of goes, you know, the theory. The rule almost in trapping is fill that to the trigger. Fill that trap to the trigger with your bait. I run strictly cat food for all my bait. Nothing more other than dry, cheap cat food. In bulk, whatever I can get at Walmart, 50-pound, 40-pound bags. But I am loading that sucker. I am mounding it. It's overflowing. There's 20 pieces on the ground. And the few reasons I do that.
So the old saying with the dog proofs, you're catching them, not feeding them, you don't buy that.
In my opinion, no. Will a trap that has food right below the trigger still catch them? Absolutely. But for my reasons, I got two main reasons for it. One, I think it is a little more appealing because I set right on that trail. You know, a lot of people are trying to pull them off. I'm setting that DP dead center. By the time that DP is mounted up, you know, an inch of food sitting on top of it, that's almost hitting a coon in the nose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's, I mean, so you're all of a sudden walking and someone throws a cheeseburger in your face, like, hey, you know, versus you smell one over on the table, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's hard to say no to, in my eyes. And at the same time, we have a lot of issues with mice. Mice are terrible with cleaning out dog proofs. But if you mount it up like that, you know, it takes them probably 3 days for the mice to be able to come in there and eat all your cat food.
That makes sense.
So that being said, I can drive past and look, you know, if it's one that I can easily see from the road, I can look, okay, that one's still operational. I didn't catch anything, but there's still cat food in it. I can still see the cat food in it. If I just filled it to the trigger,
don't know.
Every day, I'm probably coming up there going, well, that got cleaned out. I mean, some of them I can actually see inside the tube from the road. So I can just look up, okay, still cat food in it.
You angle them that way so you can see them?
Certain situations, not all the time. I'd say probably 20%, but if it's, you know, if I'm actually not on the downslope, but coming up the upslope of the opposite bank, absolutely. You know, any way I can make it smoother and easier for me, and then when I mound that full of cat food, yeah, you know, it's going to last 3 or 4 days to the mice, versus if you just filled it to the trigger every single day. If I didn't have a catch, I'm having to fill that up. And it saves me time, which is energy, you know, because that's...
You think the fish pellets are cheaper, though?
I've had a lot of people tell me that, and I haven't used them yet, to be honest with you.
Because, like, Tractor Supply, of course, everything's going up, so I don't know what they are right now, but, like, when I do my coon collector stuff, it's $12 for 40 pounds.
Yep.
And the cat food we get our cats is way more than $12.
Yeah, it's something I'm going to look into. Actually, just heard about that here this last year. Just didn't get the time to really look into it. But, I mean, really, even if with the cat food, my bait, I think I spent $170 on bait last year for everything. So it's not terrible. But yeah, I'm always looking to improve it. I always tell people, if you got something that works for you, don't change it.
Mm-hmm.
I had someone that watched my YouTube come up here yesterday, and he's like, I see you're using cat food, and I've had really good success with marshmallows under the trigger, and I'm just nervous about changing. I'm like, if you like it, don't.
Mm-hmm.
Stick with it. You know, a lot of trapping is what you have confidence in. If you have confidence in your stuff, it you're going to perform, you know, and that's why I keep telling everyone, I'll help out and give pointers of what I do, but do what works for you. Maybe take a little thing here or there and modify it to fit you, whatever works. But just, you know, everyone thinks you have to do what the next up-and-coming thing is. And it's like, no, absolutely not. You know, pick something that works for you and stick with it.
Are you doing anything, or how close are you getting it where the trigger fires when it gets touched? Are you running it like a deep dog, or are you running it?
Not really. I really don't even pay much attention to it. I'll set it and go as deep as I can, and I don't really mess with, on a dog proof, I'm not really messing with the trigger much at all.
Okay.
You know, I'm not hair triggering it. I'm not, you know, it, I'll just, for me, it's just, they're going to grab it. I don't know. You know, it's not like, for me, it's a little different, you know, compared to a 1.5, which most of mine, I got night lashed and run a pretty hair trigger trying to catch a mink or something like that. But dog proofs, I mean, I say that's why I'm a coon trapper, because they're just dumb. You know, they're not like everyone's like, you're going to go after coyotes? It's like, they're smarter than me. I don't even want to mess with that yet.
Yeah, I don't believe that.
My dog proofs, it blew a lot of minds when I said I fill them full, because that's kind of against the, what I'd call the rule that everyone says you have to do. And, you know, I encourage everyone to once in a while step outside that rule, you know, see what it does, you know, see what works for you. Everyone's got their own thing that's going to make their system smoother, and they just need to find that and stick with it.
So what about when the ground freezes? Are you having issues because the trap can't come out and spin? Are you doing anything for that? Or just
actually, since I run pogos for everything, I would actually stick it in the hole, the actual hole of the pogo itself. And what it would do is I'd kind of waller out that hole if possible, which when it's frozen, it's really hard to do. But I would almost set the dog proof to the side just a little bit, so it actually freeze to the ground on about an inch of that stake.
Okay.
Just on one side, just on, you know, a third of that stake on the side is frozen. But, I mean, with your hand, you could hit it and knock it over. Just, I mean, it'll bust right off. But at the same time, you know, it's going to stand there for a coon playing with it and messing with it. I am this year probably trying to switch a little bit from pogo and go into rebar for the late season, just because I've been so many washers, and you know, last year I tore up a lot of pogos trying to force them into frozen ground, or so I'm something I got to improve on for sure. You know, I got plenty of
man.
Yeah, I know.
You can run them in railroad beds.
Yeah, I get it. I know it. But.
Well, one of the things that I haven't done, because I don't deal that much with frozen ground, but up here, when I travel, I run into things, and my brain starts thinking, like, you live in Iowa, where you have a crap ton of ethanol. Oh, byproduct of ethanol is glycerin.
Yeah.
And one of the things I've often wondered, because you can get it in 55-gallon drums up here, probably in every one of these little towns or close, is to, when you... Like, if you put the trap in, wallowed it, shoot glycerin in it, put it back in, because that would keep, I think that would keep that unfrozen at least down to probably about 12 degrees.
Huh. Never would have thought of that, yeah.
Because if you're buying it by the 55-gallon drum, it's way different than buying it by gallon.
Oh, I'm sure. Absolutely. That's something I never would have thought of. See, we're bouncing ideas off each other already.
Dude, I mean, you blew me away with the stretcher. And the reason I'm looking at that is, in the South, we have red clay. And I know y'all have that gray stuff that I learned to cuss. Because you put a T-bar in, you can't get it out.
Yeah.
I mean, I just couldn't. I was running T-bars at the time. I could not. I would sit there like I was trying to move a house.
Yeah, it's a backbreaker. You get them down in there in that good clay. It's tough.
But I'm thinking on the red clay at home for beaver and otter, because the stretcher is such a hard, bendable, thin material that it would just wiggle into the clay.
Oh, absolutely.
Without having, you know, something that's so big.
Yeah, no, yeah, absolutely. I'll get those rat stretchers. I mean, I can get them as deep as I want to. I mean, because they are so thin, pencil-like. I mean, they can really work in there pretty well. And they don't have the ribs and stuff like rebar and T-post stuff would. So, yeah, they work pretty well. I'm pretty happy with them.
So is that pretty much your system, the 220s and the dog proof?
Pretty much. That's another thing that baffles people. Everyone tells me to catch numbers, you got to be in the water. And I almost avoid the water. You know, and
I've got to tell you something when we get off, because I don't want to get somebody in trouble. But what you just said, if people knew the other people that catch more than they do, it would blow their mind how they don't go to the water.
Yeah, no, absolutely. you know, growing up, well, that's, you know, when I learned to trap, when I started getting into it, I was finding creeks, you know, finding water, find those tracks. it's just kind of the staple thing that everyone says, you know, coon gravitate towards water, which they do. And the big number guys say that's how you're going to catch them. That's how you're going to catch them.
But they're also smaller on average.
They are. You know, that's where Mama Coon took her babies to learn how to fish. You know, I said almost all dry land trails of the big trees along a timber going to a cornfield, the culvert coming from the timber going to the cornfield. And generally those are bigger coon, especially if you get like a fence row where there's no tree around crossing to a cornfield. You know, you might have a patch of timber a mile away. You know, you're going to catch a 3 and 4 XL coon on that. You know, he's not hunting fish and crawdads and stuff. He's looking for birds and stuff like that along that fence line crossing to corn. And dry, you know, and when you're handling fur, you know, all these coon are dry, they're fluffy. And that's a huge game changer when you go back to the shop and, all right, you got 50 coon to skin out, or, you know, 50 nice big dry coon, or you got 50 mud balls that you got to power wash first and then hang them to dry. And
they never dry quick once they're dead.
Oh, I don't
know how that works.
Yeah, I'm not either, but yeah, it just, you know, that much between being bigger coon, dry, fluffy, it's just, for me, it's no break. Plus, it saves my energy. You know, a lot of these high bank, you know, these land trails, they're only, you know, I'll set 5 feet off the road. You know, I got three steps down there, and I've got that coon 45 seconds, I'm in the truck.
Mm-hmm.
Versus down home where I'm at, you know, that creek's 30 feet down with erosion rock, and go down there and catch 3 coon, all muddy, coming up. You know, I'm going to spend 10 minutes there, easy.
You were way smarter than I was.
Yeah. Oh, I did it. I used to do it. I mean, and then I started learning these land trails, and I was like, why in the hell am I wasting all that energy? You know, and it's, you know, it's kind of dangerous too. You can break an ankle walking up those rocks. I mean, twist something. It's pretty bad. And then I learned these land trails, and it was just like, click. Let's get out of the water, find land.
Well, when I was here, one of the guys that I kept running up on, he was super nice. And I mean, he was kicking my ass, dude. It was ugly how bad he was kicking me. He was very nice about it. And as far as I could tell, me and him were the only ones that were setting the dry trails. But I'd go into those bridges, and there'd be like 14, 15 perfect red O'Hearn sets with red O'Hearn bait,
yep,
2 foot apart. And I'm like, well, you know that coon's going to get caught in two of these, and yep, there's going to be a fist fight over,
yep,
stolen
who got
coon
it first.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So that's pretty cool. So what made you really want to film the whole thing?
Kind of like what I told you earlier with all that negativity towards me. You know, I wanted to show that you don't have to be a Clint Locklear, a Jeff Dunlap, and do it for a living. You know, do a trapping business for, you can be a blue collar family man with a full time job and still go out there and kick ass if you want to. It's all how much drive do you have? How badly do you want it? You know, I met a couple kids this year. They're like, oh, I learned
so much. But
you
know, that's how me and Jeff started.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But, you know, it's like these kids come up to me and like, oh, I, That's so cool. I wanna catch some coon this year. I got a route before school, and I'm gonna put out 20 traps, and that's awesome. Go out there and do it. You know, I mean, you know, obviously school's important, but you know, that dad of a single dad wants to go out and teach his kids how to trap. Go out there and set 10 traps, 15 mm-hmm. traps. You know, it's whatever drive you have and want to do, that's what you need to do. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to run like I am or like Red is, but whatever you want to do, push yourself hard enough to get that goal done. You know, there's a lot of people that want to set their bar higher and higher every time, like I'm doing. Then there's guys that just, I want to catch 200 coon every year. And that's perfectly fine. Just do that. But it somehow it's got lost now, I think, that, you know, the average blue-collar guy can't do it. The guys that, you know, unless your name's out there, it's not done, if that makes sense.
Well, it may be the perception, but that's just not the case, because there's a whole lot of guys
that absolutely
catch a crap ton of stuff that people don't even know who they are.
Absolutely, yeah. I know. I mean, there's guys out there that you don't know their name, and they're running circles around me. I mean, just absolutely just blowing me out of the water for numbers.
Well, me and Jeff have both talked about this. If we didn't sell lure and DVDs back in the day, I would want it where nobody knew my name.
Yep.
Absolutely. I wouldn't want. I mean, we do it because that's part of modern day business, is you have to promote.
Absolutely.
But if you're not promoting that, you're bringing a whole lot of heat on you that you don't have to have. So that's really cool. So did someone go with you every day and film?
Nope. I film pretty much everything myself.
That takes time.
Yeah. The timing, or just the filming of it. And I tried to put everything on that night when I'd upload the video every night. So once I got done with the family or whatever, then I'd upload the video or edit it, which I didn't have to do a whole lot of editing because I wasn't running the camera full time. It's just stop, show my locations, what I'm setting on, show the catch, turn it off, hop, take the camera back to the truck, grab my pellet gun, come back down, take care of the coon, rebait it, come back to the truck. So I was making a lot of double trips, but you know, then I just put it on, edit it every night, and you know, make a nice.
Because you needed more to do.
Yeah, that's, I needed a lot more to do. I was starting to get bored. So, you're just 15, 20 minute clips. Some of my earlier ones, I think, got to be 25, 30 minute videos, just because I had a lot more to show.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, that's cool, man. It's a shame somebody like Netflix would put a documentary, you know, like what you're doing, and bring an actual camera crew down and just follow you, because that would flip people out. I mean, in a good way, I think.
Yeah.
You know, there'd be people that would hate on it, but there'd be this people that would be marvel, because I guarantee you, there's people in this country that go, "But raccoons are almost extinct."
There are, 100%. You know, people that think, yeah. What, I'm trying to remember what it was now. I had a picture of an otter. It's in the American Trapper. I had a double on otter one day, and they're like, "Are those sea otters? They've got to be extinct." And it's just, you know, there's so many people that don't know this world, and I mean, I could get spun off on that so much with how people, you know, are the new people we want involved in this. They don't know. They're not on, you know, your level or my level. They're beginning, and that, you know, we need to help encourage that. Mm-hmm. You know, if they don't know what that animal is and they want to be a trapper, you know, we need to help them with that, not shun them or discourage them of how do you not know that? You know, that was a big thing. My last video I made, I got a lot of hate for, but I said, you know, realistically, trappers are kind of our worst enemy right now, because we have very little youth getting involved in the sport. And, you know, there's a bunch of Facebook groups out there for people that are wanting to learn. And I've watched some of these guys.
But if someone asks a basic question, it's like, what, are you stupid?
Exactly.
Well, no, he just doesn't know what it
They're
is.
They're learning.
I don't know how to make a nuclear bomb, so if I was going to decide I needed to do that, I'd have to ask some really stupid questions.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, I always say there's no such thing as a stupid question. There's just uneducated people. You know, and that's, you know, going back to the Facebook issues, it's like, guys, if someone asks you if this is a coyote or a raccoon,
but help see, them I out. Think that's ego. That's where the ego is the issue.
It's terrible, and honestly, it just pisses me off, because I'm trying to to help promote our youth and get our kids involved and do everything I can. Today, me and Alan have that kids demo at 9 o'clock. He's donating all kinds of traps for the kids and everything. And, you know, he's really helped me along with that. But just, you know, we need to get kids involved. And when you tear him down like that and make fun mm-hmm. of him or something, now not only does he not want to be involved, trappers are pricks. You know, they're mean people. And it's like, why? You know, that's wrong. You know, we shouldn't be doing that. We should be promoting it and helping them. There's no such thing as a stupid question. Just, I could go on for days with that. It's just frustrating.
I stay off social media a lot. Yep. You know, for business, I should do a whole lot more. But how many arguments have you got in because you overfill your, see, I even just said it, didn't mean it, but you fill up your dog proof traps.
Yep. Oh yeah. I've got a bunch.
I'm sure some of those were venomous.
Yeah, absolutely.
But why?
That's exactly, you know, and that's why I'll just politely say, if you don't like it, then don't do it. That's fine. Whatever works for you, you do that. I'm not trying to tell you how to do it. I'm trying to help someone that doesn't know. And I always say, this is how I do it.
Mm-hmm.
If you can take something along this lines and modify it to fit you, awesome. If nothing fits you, sorry, I tried. Mm-hmm. But I want to help in any way I can.
Yeah. So, are you shooting for another 1,000 coon this year?
Yep, absolutely.
Or is it 1,100? I'm trying to see what your personality is like.
I feel really bad about falling short last year because I only got 897. We did fall short on that, which honestly, I think we had a lot of distemper come through and start cleaning stuff out because nobody's trapping anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Not making excuses, but it was frustrating. So I'd honestly like to hit 1,200, but I'm...
Is that kind of like your big end goal?
When I started trapping, I got bigger. I had two goals. I wanted 100 coon day and 1,000 coon. And I think I made that goal 5 years ago. And I hit it on, it'd been the fourth year now. So, you know, I'm not done growing by any means. But at the same time, at what point, how much drive can I have while still having a family? You know, that's something. I can push harder and harder and harder. But at some point, I'm going to start, you know, cutting in a time with them or work, and you know, that's always going to be priority.
My recommendation, the way I used to set goals a lot that I haven't talked a lot about because it seems I don't even know how to say it, it could come across wrong, like 1,000 coon. That's a goal that you can break down. To me, the goal setting gets interesting when I want to catch 1,000 coons 3 days quicker than I did last year.
Okay.
I want to catch the whatever your average is on coon a day, whatever that average comes out to be, and it's taking you between 2:30 and say 7 when you go to work. I really want to figure out how to catch those coon an hour quicker every day. Okay. And then I drop that down 30 minutes every day. And then that, to me, that's where you start getting into some really efficiency stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
Because your goal's forcing you to do that instead of just
becoming more efficient. Absolutely. Yeah. I never would have thought of it that way. That's a good way to look at things.
Is there anything else you can say? Because we're going to have to get to the convention.
Yeah, not that I can think of. You know, just take a kid out, take him trapping. You know, we got to promote this sport. Like I said earlier, we're kind of dying in a way. There's not a whole lot left of us, and we need to promote it, you know, and show the world that what we're doing is not wrong and evil and terrible. And that's, you know, we just got to keep moving and just help each other. That's all we can do.
Well, that's a good way to end it. I appreciate it, buddy.
No, I appreciate you letting me up here, Clint. So.
All right. Well, let me close this.